Good morning, everyone. All right. Got a great crowd here this morning. It's so good to see friends and family out today. Really thank everybody for supporting me and talking about this trip. I'm super excited to share the information from it. It was very hard to put this slide and lesson together today. I got to experience so much, I really had to narrow it down to just a few things that I did. So this won't be the last lesson I do on this, because I was only able to do like a subsection of the things that I got to do in Israel. So we are going to be looking at those things today. We're going to be talking about Israel. I kind of picked this slide because I thought it looked Middle Eastern. And I thought it also looked like pomegranates, because they have a lot of pomegranates over there. So you could be walking down the street and people would just hand you pomegranates. So they kind of reminded me of what that looks like. But I wanted to start off this morning with a few Bible verses. We are going to be just taking a look at a handful of Bible verses to kick it off this morning. I am going to be talking about why I went and what I did while I was there. So there's going to be some non-biblical things. And then I'm going to tie it back to some of the places that I went to, some of the places that I saw, tie it back to some scriptures, and talk about what I did while I was there. So I have a Bible verse here, 1 Samuel. We're going to take a look at 1 Samuel 13 and 19 here in just a minute, but I thought I would explain real quick about the word or the name Israel. So I wanted to go back and just talk about Jacob real quick. As most of you guys know, that I named my son Jacob, which also means deceiver, so I had to really think about that, right? Maybe that wasn't the best choice, but so... So when we look at Jacob, we know that Jacob had 12 sons, so we have the 12 tribes of Israel. So in Genesis 32:22-31, so we have some scriptures here. We're only going to be looking at verse 28, and it says, "Then the man said, 'Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome.'" So we see God changing Jacob's name to Israel here. Now, I believe the name Israel means one who struggles with God. So we can see that this name has been changed, and then we have the Israelites. So we have basically all of the tribes here. Now, here at Waynesville, we've just done about a two-year Bible map study. We spent about a half a year on the Old Testament and about a year on the New Testament. So we're just kind of coming out of this Bible study, and what a time to go to Israel after we just finished that Bible study. So I'm going to be referring to a lot of things that we did in that study. But I do want to just point out back to that 1 Samuel verse, 1 Samuel 13 and 19, and this might seem kind of like an odd verse to use to kind of kick off a lesson. But here it says, "Now there was no smith found throughout the land of Israel." From what I understand, this is the very first time in the Bible that land of Israel was ever used. So I just want to point that out because it mentions the land of Israel. Now they're getting ready to go to war against the Philistines. And we know that, we also did a biblical war study here. We know that the Philistines were very well into making spears and swords. They actually used glass and silver and copper. They were some of the first groups to use some of those different things to making swords. They were making fun of the Israelites. They were like, "Oh, well, you know, what are they going to do? You know, bring farm gear against us?" And they did. So the Israelites actually sharpened their spears and their mattocks and their axes, and they went to war and they won due to God's help for that victory. But I also have a little bit of a timeline down here. This is kind of just a snapshot. Showing, basically, here in 1 Samuel, we know that a lot is happening here. We have Hannah giving her son Samuel to become a prophet. At that time, the Israelites were calling out for a king. So they make Saul the king about here in our timeline. And right here at about chapter 13, as they're working towards that unified kingdom, we start to see that they use the term Israel. So that kind of just sets the stage of why we call it Israel today. And if we were to put it in perspective, here is what it looked like where the 12 tribes were. Now, these are the areas that we would commonly consider Israel. But, interesting enough, Israel is really small. Really small. Compared to us here in the States. So, it's only 290 miles north and south and 85 miles wide. Right? You could do that an afternoon. I think of like when we get up and drive to Tennessee, you go to Gatlinburg from here, it's 300 miles. So just think that that is a further distance than the nation of Israel. Now, I do want to point out that there's also microclimates. We're going to show that here in a little bit. Within 30 minutes, you could be on the beach in somewhere that looks like Miami, and you could be in Saudi Arabia. So you could be in sand dunes and on a beach within 30 minutes of each other. So that's a drastic climate change. They had everything when we would drive down the streets. I got some pictures in a minute. But we would go from vineyards to banana plantations to they grew kiwis, strawberries, everything to olives, of course. And the things that shocked me the most is avocados. They grew a lot of avocados, things that I didn't consider actually being part of their agricultural system there. Now, they do a lot of exports of those things, but Israel's number one export is diamonds. Yeah. Not diamonds that they dug there. It's just cut diamonds. So if we were to look at Israel and the size of Israel compared to everywhere else, this itty-bitty little sliver is what Israel looks like up against the United States. Then this is the state of New Jersey. It's almost the same size as the state of New Jersey. So this is a very, very, very small space to have a lot of people. So when we start talking about how many people would be there, so I spent most of my time in Tel Aviv. Now, all of the pictures that I'm using today are all the ones that I've taken, all except one, and I'll explain that a little bit later on. So this is a picture of Joppa. If you guys remember that Joppa is a city that's used throughout the Bible. That's actually where they would have received the cedar trees in to build the temple. They went through the port of Joppa. Jonah would have fled to Joppa to go to Tarsus when he was asked by God to go to Nineveh. So that is one of the oldest cities in the world. And that's, I'm standing there taking a picture of Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv means old and new land, so it's land that has just started to be inhabited probably about since the 1960s. So this is all brand new growth, all brand new builds. You know, there's about 500,000 people that live in the city, and there is 1 million people that commute into Tel Aviv every day. So the traffic looks fascinating because when I did some of the tours, there was not a single person going out of the city and millions of people coming into the city. So if you know your traffic patterns, it was pretty easy in and out of the city. So just speaking of the city and the city of Tel Aviv, I just want to mention that the opportunity that I got to go to Israel was I was asked through the U.S. Embassy to be a representative or a delegate as they talked through cybersecurity businesses. Israel is really big on developing and starting new cybersecurity firms. And I got to go to talk to some of the first ever kickoff meetings with some of these brand new companies here in Tel Aviv. So I was asked through the U.S. Embassy. This person standing right here is Josh with the U.S. Embassy. He's the person that gathered all of us together. So I'm with other people from Microsoft and Cisco and all of the big tech giants because they're there to invest in these startup companies. So that was the reason that I got to go there. So I got to hear thousands of kickoff meetings with different companies on what they do and how they do it and so on. But this is what the city looks like there in Tel Aviv. It's a beautiful city. It's modern, as you can think about it. It's a brand new city. And of course, being with the delegation and being with the United States, you know, they kind of rolled the red carpet out. We got to do a lot of events. We got to do a lot of different things. It was really funny talking to people since I wasn't there and I didn't have money to sell to a company. I was just there for education reasons. People are like, oh, and they would go talk to somebody else because I didn't have any money to hand out. I was funded through Sinclair's foundation program. The Hollis Family Foundation gave about $500,000 to Sinclair about 10 years ago just to do international travel to build relationships with other countries. So that's what I did. I went over there. I actually had two meetings last week with Israeli companies that we're probably going to partner with at Sinclair. I got to do a lot of other cyber defense related things. Like I said, this is kind of non-biblical, just kind of showing what we did over there. I got to go to where they did water desalinization, where they pump water out of the Mediterranean Sea. They clean it, and then they send it into the city. Where we were was responsible for 26% of the water that is used in Israel. So we're actually here standing in the facility. I have a lot of pictures of the facility. Some things we can't share, some things I was able to share. But these are just pictures of us being in the facility, going over their cyber defense platform, and then them actually giving us water directly out of the tap that came directly out of the Mediterranean Ocean. So that's me holding a cup that 90 minutes earlier was sucked out of the Mediterranean. It was interesting working with them there. As you guys can imagine, that they are always under threat of missile attacks. So this facility that I was actually standing at has been hit multiple times with missiles. It's probably the most targeted place in Israel. Right next to it is the power plant and the water desalinization center right next to each other. So it had been hit multiple times by missiles. So there's safe rooms and everything inside of that facility behind me that you can go into if there was ever an alert. We did have to install apps on our phone that let us know if there was a missile strike in our area to go into one of those shelters. But I was with the military there, so I felt pretty safe. It was a really windy, bad, stormy day, so I didn't feel like, you know, I felt like if a missile came, it would probably get knocked off course. But I do have to say that every day in our lives, I've reflected about what I did there. Because when I go into work, I don't worry about a missile attack. When they go into work, they worry about a missile attack every minute of every day. And for them, they think it's funny. For me, I didn't really see the humor in it. But this individual right here, he's over the facility. And before the water goes into the city or into Israel, there is a quality check that his company does. And then there's a quality check that the government does. As you can imagine, there's a huge distrust right now with the Israeli government, if anybody's there to see the protests that are going on right now. But about a year before we got here, one of the missiles that hit the building went through the wall, went through the ceiling, bounced off the floor through the wall, and it blew up the government testing facility. And they thought that that was the funniest thing in their lives, that it blew up the government building and not theirs, because they felt like they kind of competed against each other. So they're telling us that story. We're horrified, and they're thinking that it's hilarious. So that was it, some of the things that we got to do. Since my Uncle Steve is here today, I wanted to throw this picture in. I got to meet with all of the directors of the 8200 group. They are the top branch of military when it comes to Israel intelligence. These are all three of them. I was in a room with only about 20 other people in them, so I got to hang out with the very top of Israel intelligence for a day. So that's another conversation that was very interesting. So the city of Tel Aviv, again, beautiful city. Every very modern gelato food shops on every corner, as you can imagine. And then the city itself that sits on the Mediterranean. So where our hotel was, we sat right on the Mediterranean. So this was just in the morning and in the evening, just hanging out there at the Mediterranean. This is the hotel we stayed at, right there on the Mediterranean. So this, I don't think, looks too far off of what it would have looked like in biblical times, because just north and south of Tel Aviv was just undeveloped land, and it looked exactly like this. The beach fronts, the palm trees, you know, just the Mediterranean Ocean right there would have been definitely reminiscent of what it would have been back in those times. Which, if I brought up a picture of Tampa, Florida, and Tel Aviv, it would be hard to tell the difference of which is which. And again, the markets and the food everywhere. I drew this picture up here because Jacob pretty much eats nothing but chicken and french fries. And look, you can get American chicken there. That's actually in the city of Joppa. So I think it's funny when people go there, they're like, oh, I want to have this biblical experience, and you're standing in the city center and you're seeing American chicken. it's kind of what it felt like. So again, I gave a lesson here about 2 years ago because my doctor keeps telling me I need to go on a Mediterranean diet. So when I went there, I was like, yes, please. I would love to go on a Mediterranean diet. It was pretty much nothing but pastries and ice cream when we were there. So I did get to go on 3 tours as we kind of get into some of the biblical applications today. I just wanted to show the kind of the places and what I did. So I did get to do 3 tours. I spent an entire day in Jerusalem. Then I went to Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee. And then I went to Masada and the Dead Sea. Now, I do have some artifacts that are in the back. On your way out, check out some of the things that I was able to purchase. There I have a Roman lamp that was anything from 30 BC to 60 AD. That would have been used during Jesus' time. There's a Roman lamp. I got to go swimming in the Dead Sea, and me not thinking, I ignored what our tour guide said and said, you need to wear shoes when you go into the Dead Sea. And then, of course, they were selling shoes for like $100. And I'm like, I'm not going to buy a $100 pair of shoes. But yeah, that's every rock in the Dead Sea is salt, like crystallized salt. Right, so just imagine 1,000 razor blades. So my feet survived that. But one of the things that I did is I reached down to the ground and I picked up a rock of salt, and I hit it over another rock and broke a chunk out of it. So that piece of salt there is what I busted right off of a rock there at the Dead Sea. So it's out there as well. I also have a mite that some currency that would have been used out there as well. And I bought all of those from the Israel Tourism Office. So hopefully they're legitimate. You never know, right? So as we kind of get into it, I kind of wanted to start with this kind of series of lessons from Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee. Now, the reason that I picked that is because Jerusalem, when I do that one, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to kind of break down exactly what I did there in Jerusalem. I've actually had to go back to maps and back to studies about where Jerusalem was and what's been rebuilt, what's been torn down to kind of get a better idea of all of the locations that I was at. There were multiple times that I kicked myself that I was standing right where something important happened and I didn't take a picture. I'm going to prove that here in a minute. But as we go throughout this study, I do want to show some Bible verses of where things were and what happened. So again, all of these pictures are the ones that I've taken on this tour. We're going to start at Nazareth.
I heard him speak when I last visited him with concern for his children.
To the Sea of Galilee and Capernaum. And then I'm going to end it at the Jordan River. We're going to talk a little bit about the Jordan River, and then we might pick up there the next time I might do this lesson. So here's Nazareth. So we're going to talk a little bit about Nazareth. So I want to remind everybody that Nazareth is actually mentioned a few times because we first start off by learning about Joseph and Mary first living in Nazareth. So this is a picture looking out into the city of Nazareth. And in Luke 2 and 4, it says, Joseph went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth. So we can see that Joseph and Mary first lived in Nazareth. They went to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem. Now, I didn't get to go to Bethlehem. Just as a reminder, Bethlehem is actually in the West Bank under Palestinian control. Was not a good time because I think everybody remembers that when I left, some Palestinians came in and killed 12 people leaving a church. So there was a little bit of turmoil as soon as I landed there. So I was asked not to kind of go down that way by some Israelis while I was there. So I took their suggestions, and I was like, I'll go there next time. Because he was out of the house of the lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, as who was with child. So we see that from Luke 2 and 4, that they first lived there in Nazareth. Now, as we know how the story goes along, that they went down to Bethlehem to be a part of the census. Mary had Jesus. Now, we know that Herod was trying to kill all of the children, so they fled to Egypt. Now, they're in Egypt, and then they get word that Herod has died, that they can now move back So then that's where we pick up in Luke 2 and 39. It says, "So when they heard that when they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord and returned to Galilee to their own city of Nazareth." So some time has passed. You know, there's some time that has passed between when they're at Bethlehem, they went to Egypt, and then they came back. "And now the child grew and became strong in the spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him." Now, we don't know much more than this and a couple other verses about what Jesus did while he was in Nazareth. We really don't have all that much. Now, I wanted to show this picture because below this walkway is where they're renovating or they're discovering a lot of the original city of Nazareth. Now, I know that we've kind of brought up timelines before about what is going on over in Israel right now. But a lot of this stuff wasn't discovered until like the 1920s, 1950s, because of the other controls over the city. So we would commonly think, oh, well, you could go over there at any point and see all of these things that would have been there. Not until recently have you actually been able to go and see these things. So we're going to talk about that as we get into things a little bit further, just because things have been destroyed, knocked down, rebuilt, destroyed, knocked down, rebuilt. And then that's what's going to be hard about the Jerusalem one, because it's been, the center of turmoil for 2,000 years or before. So I just wanted to show this because this is an undercut picture of what Nazareth, with what they're currently excavating right now. They are currently working there. There was workers there while I was standing there. I don't know if you can see, there's a group of them in this area. Those people are getting ready to be a part of a dig. So, I find that fascinating that they're just uncovering some of these things. Now, on top of this area, on top of Nazareth, is this church that has been built on top of it. One of the things I found out quite a bit in Israel is there's normally churches built on top of churches on top of churches. And then when we talk about Jerusalem in that study, there's actually 12 churches in the Via Dolorosa, and we'll get into that too, about where it was built and why things were built the way that they were. But this is essentially built on top of what they're excavating under as a part of the original part of Nazareth. Now, the reason that this structure is like this is to support and preserve some of the homes that were found underneath of it. Now, this picture right here is an idea of where they think Joseph and Mary would have lived. Is it exactly? Huh? Nobody knows. But is it like? Yeah. It is. And the interesting thing is we know that Joseph was a carpenter. So this kind of helped me realize quite a few things as I was walking through this area right here. I didn't know what a shusher was, so that was a new experience for me. Because if you say anything in here, you have a couple nuns attack you and try to keep you to be quiet. And our poor tour guide was just trying to move us around, and he got escorted out. But you have to be completely silent in here. It'd be very hard to take Jacob. But you have to be completely silent as you go through here. But some of the things that our tour guide was trying to whisper to me was, look at this rock structure. You know, when we think of a carpenter, we think of somebody that would build this building, maybe with wood and stuff like that. And it really made me start considering, well, maybe Joseph was a mason, carpenter, and so on. This house would have been built about 2,000 years ago, so the structure and the way that it's designed. But, however, this basically would have been the basement. According to our tour guide, the house would have been built on top of this area. But the structure would have been basically that design. Now, with this structure and with this design, the reason that they think that may have been Joseph and Mary's house was directly behind it was a carpenter shop that they found. So this is an excavation carpenter shop where they found the tools and carpentry and all that kind of stuff. And then this area would have been made used to make stones and brick and carpentry programs and stuff like that. So again, I'm in the basement of a church, on top of a church, on top of a church. So those are all stacked up, and we're on the very lowest level of this facility that they built on top of it. So as kind of going through this, this is where they think that the carpentry shop would have been. Like I said, they found tools and stuff like that. And also, I used a 365-degree camera, so it took a picture around, so that's why it might look a little bubbled. But this doorway right here goes into that house that I was just showing. It's actually a passage into that other facility. Again, just interesting. Also, just talking about how small world everything is, I'm a faculty member at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, and we're getting ready to run a program there. And these are two students from the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs that knew who I was. That is a small world. So that is kind of the Nazareth area. As you can imagine, we didn't get to spend a lot of time there. So from Nazareth, we went to the Sea of Galilee. This is pictures along the road between Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee. Again, these are fairly close together. It's only about a 10-minute, 15-minute ride between these two locations. These are banana plantations. Huge, huge, multiple acres of bananas. This would just be the area of Galilee. When we mention Galilee in the Bible, it's actually a large area. There's northern and southern Galilee, and it's on the side of the sea there. So as we went down, we went to another place where they think that Jesus fed the 5,000. So I'd like to read these verses real quick and take a look at when Jesus fed the 5,000. So in Luke 9 and 13 it says, "But he said to them," this is just after he found out that John the Baptist was beheaded. So there's quite a bit going on up to Luke 9. "But he said to them, you give them something to eat. And they said, we have no more than 5 loaves and 2 fish, unless we go and buy food for all these people. For there were about 5,000 men. Then he said to his disciples, make them sit down in groups of 50. So groups of 50, 5,000, that's 100 groups. He said to them, bring them here to me. Then he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass. And he took 5 loaves and 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples. And the disciples gave to the multitude. So they all ate and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets full of fragments that remained. Now those who had eaten were about 5,000 men, besides women and children." So this is the general area of where they think this happened. And what I mean general area, like almost probably a half mile by half mile area that they had kind of blocked off for this area. However, this facility was built on top of where they think this happened. And as you can see under here, there's a rock that's a little bit higher than all the other rocks in the area. And they think that maybe this is where Jesus stood while he may gave a sermon or talked to everyone there when he had them divided up into groups. The interesting thing about this specific facility, this building, you can see the mosaic tile floor. They think that that floor was built in 478 AD. Then it was destroyed in 614. Then somebody happened to discover some of the floor in 1932. So then this building wasn't finished until 1981. So when you just think about time frames like that, it hasn't been all that long that people were allowed in to see this flooring. It was just kind of uncovered in the 1980s. The interesting thing with this floor is just some of the fragments and things that they found. None of the animals or anything on the floor are from this area. They're all from Egypt. None of the birds or anything on the floor would have been native from the area. Also, Jacob has got a little Bible made out of olive tree wood, and there is an emblem of two fish and some bread on it. And that's actually what they found when they uncovered the floor right here. It was that image. So that image was from 478 AD. I just think that's pretty cool. So also, we can kind of see what happened after. So we have Jesus fed the 5,000. Then this is what happened immediately after. So immediately Jesus took his disciples to get into a boat and go before the other side while he sent the multitude away. And when he had sent the multitude away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. So if this is the general area where they think that Jesus fed the 5,000, right there is the Sea of Galilee. This is where he would have had the disciples go. Then he sent the multitude away. And then he would have probably turned around, again, in this general area behind him, and went up. It says a mountain, but we would consider it a hill. It's pretty flat in this area. He would have went up on this hill. My tour guide was from Germany for this one. So he made fun of the word terms mountain and hill, because everything to him is a mountain in Germany. But directly behind me is what they would consider the Mount of Beatitudes, or where Jesus went to pray at this time. So if I would have turned around and taken a picture, I would have taken a picture from this direction, where right here, where we were in this area. Again, this was a nice flat area where it would assumed to be where Jesus would have fed the 5,000. It was a grassy, flat area compared to the rest of the area, which was not grassy and flat. So again, it's just assumed that it's in that area. And again, if you were to turn directly around behind, that goes straight up to this area right here. So it does incline up. It inclines up from both directions. Here's Capernaum. It inclines up both directions. Now, if I had only turned around to take the picture, it would have looked something like this. But dummy me, I'm looking out at the Sea of Galilee, and I take a picture of this, which is this corner right here. Now, I got this picture off of Wikipedia, and that's me standing at this corner taking this picture, but not turning around taking this picture. So I told Jenna I got to go back so I can turn around and take the picture of what was behind me. So that's where Jesus would have went up to, this general area, because it would have been the only area that had an incline. So after Jesus went up there to pray alone, remember, he sends his disciples out. So now, when we think about Jesus walking on the water, it would have been in this general area. And in Luke 14 and 24 it says, "But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary." Now, I forgot to mention that it only rains 3 inches a year in Israel. It rained all 3 inches when I was there. We were caught in a pretty bad storm there on the Mediterranean, and I'll have a lesson with that when we talk about Joppa and Jonah. And Jen and I had just actually been through a hurricane in Florida. It was worse than the hurricane in Florida of what came through. So I could imagine what the disciples were thinking here. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the water, and the disciples saw him walking on the sea, and they were terrible, saying, "It's a ghost," and they cried out. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." So again, that would have been in this general area. Now, I got to go to Capernaum for a while, but really, I thought it was interesting looking at the Sea of Galilee and what was around it. Interesting enough, this is a cactus. That hadn't been a thought of mine when I've imagined what the Sea of Galilee looked like. Also, you can see some of the other vegetation from that area, and about how rocky the shoreline was. It was pretty much rocky shoreline all the way up the coast on both areas, with very few flat areas for grass. It was a lot of rocky sea area. But right up from where I took this picture here at the Sea of Galilee was the city of Capernaum. So here is a picture of the city of Capernaum. This is what they've excavated. Again, this excavation didn't start until about 1940, 1950. And it says in Matthew 4 and 12, "Now when Jesus heard that John had been put into prison, he departed to Galilee, and leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is by the sea, in the regions of Zebulun and Naphtali. We also know that this is where Jesus would have called his disciples. We know that this is where he would have met with them. This is also where the sick person was lowered down through the city, the ceiling to be healed. Would have all happened about in this area. Also, you can see this structure. This is a church, again, that they built on top of a church on top of a church. But this is the original synagogue that they've uncovered from that city. Also, just another funny thing that happened. This gentleman that walked around with me here is from Franklin, Ohio. And he works for NASA and was there for a space defense thing, and he got a day to go tour. And he's from Franklin. So I just thought that was interesting. So if we were to actually look inside of what that was, we can think about here in Mark 1 and 21, and it says, "Then they went to Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath day he entered the synagogue and taught." So this is the original synagogue. It wasn't in this form, right? This has been rebuilt with what they found around in that area. "And they were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as of the scribes." So this is where they think that Jesus went in and taught in that synagogue. They have a lot of the original works from this synagogue, and they think that it was in use quite a bit while, even after Jesus' death, would have been in this area. Now, one of the things that I found extremely interesting as I was walking around inside of the synagogue was, I don't know if you can make out these writings right here. And I was like, oh, what are those writings mean? Like, you know, what was written there? And our tour guide said, well, when it was being excavated, one of the excavators passed away and they really liked him and they put his name on one of the things that he was uncovering and it ended up being the column. And he was like, well, I guess that guy's always going to be in history now because his name is actually inscribed on the columns. I thought it was, you know, some old Hebrew writings because everything was in Hebrew, right? But nope, it was just the name of one of the excavators. So this would have been that general area. Now, everything, you know, was super close together, right? So here's the city, here's where that would have been. Now, we know that a lot of things happened here in this area of Capernaum. In Matthew 4 and 23, it says, "And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all kinds of sick, all kinds of disease among the people. Then his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought to him all the sick people who were afflicted with various diseases and torments, and those who were demon-possessed, epileptic and paralytic, and he healed them. Great multitudes followed him from Galilee and from Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and beyond the Jordan." So we know that a lot of people were following Jesus from this area. Now, Capernaum would have been where he stayed. This is where it's believed that Paul had his house, because there's a couple times where Jesus went into Paul's house and his mom was sick and he healed her there. And it is believed that this would have been that home. Now, the only reason why they believe that is they what they've uncovered here is they think that this is a general meeting house that would have been used about the time that Jesus was alive. Now, since it's not the synagogue and it's away from it, they think that this may have been one of the first ever churches built. And I think I said Paul, but I think I meant Peter. this is where they think his house would have been because they think that this house would have been used for everyone to get together to learn upon Jesus' teaching. Now, whether it was used as a facility, a meeting house for the church, for the kingdom of God, I'm not sure. But it's the only thing that they've ever uncovered that would have been used for a meeting house other than any of the other religions that would have been practiced there. just the time that they would have used it, that would have been built. A lot of people consider this maybe the very first place that was used to teach Christianity as a facility to hold members. I thought that was fascinating, whether it's just a historical fact of this area or if that's what it was really used for. I showed this picture to Emma, and she's like, they could have met there. There's no walls. I'm like, well, it's 2,000 years old. It's kind of hard to maintain those walls. But they think that this would have been an original meeting house. And that's right there in Capernaum, almost right where you get to the Sea of Galilee. So as we kind of conclude here this morning, because I've already talked about 30 minutes, we're going to talk about one of the last places that I went on this tour and on this trip. We're going to talk a little bit about the Jordan River, and we're going to kind of bring this into a close. But let's talk real quick about the Jordan River. Now, before I read Matthew 3, we're going to be reading that here in just a second. One of the things that I think astonished me the most is when I stepped out of the bus here at the Jordan River was, I think my friend put it best that was with me. He said, it smells like the animal or the elephant house at a zoo. It did. It was a very, very strong smell. And I guess that's just what it's like in that area. I think of Nahum when he went to Elijah to cure his leprosy, and he was told to dip in the Jordan River for 7 times, and he said, well, why would I go to that dirty river, you know? This is in the Old Testament. Why would I go there when there's much cleaner water? And when I was there, I was like, oh, yeah, it's pretty strong in that area. I think a lot of people, as soon as you stepped out of the bus, it was like, oh, man. But there's a lot of different fish and vegetation in that area that keep just churning up the waterway. I took a lot of pictures of large carp-like fish. They look like channel cats that were just swimming in groups of like 20 or 30 that were just churning up the water. So, I mean, this is just constantly churning up. Where this picture is taken is where they think that John the Baptist baptized Jesus. There's a couple places that I just want to point out here is a lot of the other areas of the Jordan River are very small. This is just right down from the Sea of Galilee. This is where the sea comes down and the Jordan River starts. So this is one of the very few places that actually has a wide waterway. All of the rest of the Jordan River is tiny. So this is actually a deeper area. It's a wider area. So you can kind of see why people are kind of bringing it down to this conclusion. So here in Matthew 3:13, it says, then Jesus came to Galilee to John at the Jordan to be baptized by him. And John tried to prevent him, saying, I need to be baptized by you, and are you coming to me? But Jesus answered and said to him, permit it to be so, for thus it is fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness. Then he allowed him. Then he baptized Jesus, came up immediately out of the water, and behold, the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting upon him. And suddenly a voice came from heaven saying, this is my beloved Son, which I am well pleased. So like I mentioned before, this is the area that they think that happened. It is a wider waterway for that to take place. We can see that Jesus is setting the example of baptism here by being baptized by John. And as we kind of come to a conclusion here, if anybody would want to be baptized or have any questions or anything for the church, we definitely always provide that opportunity for everyone. And as kind of bringing this to a close, I didn't have enough time to talk about all of the things that I wanted to talk about. So I am going to have to divide up this lesson into multiple pieces. I have a picture of me here in Jerusalem at the Wailing Wall. I want to explain all of the hundreds of camels that I saw that kind of was shocking. This is the Dead Sea, and this is the country of Jordan on the other side. And then this is the rock that they think is called Golgotha. Because there's big cracks in this rock where you would have been able to support a cross. So I do want to get into that a little bit more. Sorry I was unable to. We are going to kind of walk through these lessons as a series as we lead up to Jesus' death. I thought I would start with his preaching and teaching and then lead up into more of the things that he did there in Jerusalem. So again, I want to thank everyone for being out today. I think this goes down as history as the longest lesson that I've ever done. But I definitely want to thank everybody for giving me the time to do this and kind of explain why I was there and the things that I got to experience. After doing some very heavy math Bible study for the last couple years, it was a perfect opportunity to go see these things. Again, these are all just general areas of where they think these things happen. Even walking around with historians and people that were practicing Jews from the area, they even said the same thing. We generally think this happened here. We generally think the things are happened here. However, one of my tour guides said, you know, belief is what is the strongest thing. It's stronger than us. It is what you believe, and it's your faith. And I really took a lot from that because he was telling us of all the different alternative sites that they think that things happen. And I really appreciated that because a lot of these sites were only implemented in the 1200s. So that was, it's good to know that a lot of research and uncovering has happened that they believe that things would have happened in different areas. So I did want to mention that I do plan on doing more kind of in this series. Again, thank you for being here today and listening to this study, and I'll turn it over to Roger.